The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're welcome to GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Lads, I was wondering what to talk about at the top of the show after the game yesterday, because it was a nothing game. It was a farce. It was now almost back to the last three or four years ago when Dublin were doing that to Longford. I was thinking, Jesus, Conan's tweeting about championship structures. I refuse to entertain this at the top of the show. But I genuinely, even the B championship and the Sunday game last night, I didn't watch the Sunday game. I'm not watching it anymore. But like, that conversation is so old now. The Super 8s are coming in next year. I don't see the value in talking about that now. It doesn't make any sense.
That's good crack.
It's not good crack at all. But anyways, word got through after the game that Jim Gavin was refusing to talk to the broadcast media. So he refused to talk to RTE, he refused to talk to News Talk, any of the radio rights holders that were entitled to talk to them. And his reasons for it were not very clear, but he allowed them into his press conference, and this is pretty much what he had to say in the press conference.
First of all, I mean, we can't condone any player, interfering or any with match officials, whether it's in the rule book or not. I think that's the first thing we'd say. And Dermot accepts that he made a mistake, and he accepted the suspension. But for my part, what concerned me was the way his good name was attacked. Before we even saw the referee's report, and freedom of expression, it's one of the rights in the Republic, but it's not absolute. Each individual has his own right, and I believe that his good name was affected by that. We had the national broadcaster in their post-match review. But Pat Spillane and Colin Moore, particularly Pat, read out a predetermined statement, which was disappointing, particularly both of them are teachers. You would hope that you understand about, that people do make mistakes, and that and that due process should be allowed before we become judge, jury and executioner in one particular instance. We saw in Sky Sports the rule book being read out against them, so very, supporters have come to me and asked me what's going on and why is this imbalance happening, and I'm really kind of struggling to give them a balanced and proportionate answer. He said it was my decision to pursue it with the CHC to get their opinion on it. And we've received advice from senior counsel that if this went to arbitration, the case wouldn't hold. But Dermot didn't want that to happen. He just wanted to move on, and in the best interest of the team, that's what he decided to do. I saw instances the same weekend, the weekend after, of similar type of reaction from players where they put hands on officials, but yet there was no comment on it from any quarter and no remark on it. So it's an unbalanced, very unbalanced approach, and as I said, I've been questioned all the time by supporters to give a reasonable and logical point of view on this, and why is it happening? And it's very hard to come up with a reason why.
All right, so there's so much kind of nonsense talked in that it's hard to know where to start. But we're going to start from the very start, because I have some of the quotes pulled out from it. Like, I mean, what's Jim Gavin thinking, for starters? Like, this whole thing was completely blown over. Like, just get on with the game, and this is done and dusted. He obviously thinks he has a duty of care to Dermot. I don't see how he's serving Dermot by bringing this all up again, but thanks, Jim, for giving us something to talk about at the top of the show. Right, so he starts off by saying, first of all, we can't condone any player interfering with a match official, whether it's in the rule book or not. Dermot accepts that he made a mistake, and he accepted the suspension. Really, Jim should have said no more than that, and you would have gone, fair play to Dermot. a fair play to you, Jim, for accepting, because we heard you talking so many times about cynical fouling and how you're against it and the spirit of the game, that you would not appreciate a player pushing a referee like Dermot Connolly did. You're being consistent then, Jim. We'd all think an awful lot more of you, and let's all move on from that. but wait, there's obviously more, which you just heard. So this is the part that really, like, some weird really parts in this. For my part, what concerned me was the way his good name was attacked before we even saw the referee's report. Now, just on a silly little one to start off with, Dear McConnelly doesn't have a good name. Like, he's no more a good name in GA than I have. Let's call a spade a spade. We're not talking about Bernard Brogan or Ross Munnelly here. We're talking about Dear McConnelly or Colin Parkinson. I have to throw myself in there because I'm not going to claim to be whiter than white, but Dear McConnelly doesn't have a brilliant name. So he mentioned his brilliant name several times in the piece. But what was an interesting one was why his good name was attacked before we even saw the referee's report. So what's a pundit supposed to do? Like a paid pundit on the Sunday game. Hang on, lads. We can't comment on this big incident that happened in a game, Keane, because we have to wait until the referee's report comes in. Sure, what kind of a highlight show would you have if that's the kind of criteria managers want?
Yeah, it's just absolute guff. Like, I mean, it's complete guff. Look, he does make some semi-relevant points, and I know you're going to kind of come through them. We'll get on to them, but. Yeah, exactly. I mean, bloody hell. Could you imagine the scenario where the Sunday game was on that evening and it wasn't even mentioned? Everybody would be going mad. Why are they not talking
exactly
about this? This was an eye-catching incident in the particular game. And it was obviously going to create comment, and particularly when it's such a star player like Dermot Connolly.
Yeah.
They create more attention. That's just what happens.
That's the reality. And the fact that the referee didn't deal with it made it a bigger talking point.
Exactly.
And, like, I mean, how can they not see this logic? What is wrong with this?
I personally think that if that incident had occurred and the referee had gone over and had a word with Connolly or done something or booked him or done just dealt with it at the particular time, then I would sort of agree with Jim that if there was a big...
It
would have been a bit of a witch hunt, because I think it's commonly kind of considered across the board that, you know, if an incident like that occurs and it's dealt with on the pitch, that should be kind of where it stands. Now, unless somebody is doing something very blatant that the referee couldn't have seen, or he would have dealt with it more severely. Like, you know, a scenario where, for example, the down corner back, the captain the other day against Conor McManus. McManus wins a free out in the sideline. He jumps down on him with his knees. Now, to me, that should be highlighted in a Sunday game. That lad should be dragged up and he should be suspended for the next game, because that's a far... Look, realistically, that's a worse incident than somebody putting their hand on a fit. Now, we're not getting into that, but these are the sort of scenarios that where it's very clear the referee didn't deal with a particular incident and it needed to be highlighted for the benefit of the game as a whole.
I agree that if they were consistent, they would highlight that going down with the knees, because that's something that went on maybe 15 years ago a lot, and that was kind of gone out of the game. But we saw a good few examples of it over the weekend in both games. There was even examples of it. I think John Heslin, surprisingly enough, did something similar in the first half against Dublin. But he continues on here, and he says, "Freedom of expression is one of our rights in the Republic, but it's not absolute. Each individual has his own rights, and I believe that his good name was affected by that." Like, that sentence literally makes no sense. It's absolute gobbledygook, whatever he's trying to say there.
Back to the point for the good name. Dermot Connolly has a reputation for being an excellent footballer, and he's respected by followers of the game for his skills. But apart from that, like, nobody else can really comment on Dermot Connolly's character, because they don't really know him other than what they see him doing on the football field.
Yeah, so I don't know where, even if he had a good name, I don't know how that was even affected, because this was an incident in black and white. This is not an incident saying, this is an incident on video of him pushing a referee or a linesman and it pointing in his face. It didn't look good on Dermot. You didn't really have to say any more. You just, like, the pundits had to show this footage. But again, we don't really want to get into this. I'll just finish off a couple more of these quotes, Conan. Then he says, and then we had the national broadcaster in the post-match interview, both Pat Spillane and Colm O'Rourke, but particularly Pat, who read out a predetermined statement which was disappointing. I don't think Pat read out a predetermined statement at all. Pat just came prepared with notes. Then he continued on, particularly because both of them are teachers, and you'd hope they'd understand that people do make mistakes and that due process should be allowed before we become judge, jury and executioner on one particular incident. Their professions are absolutely irrelevant to them commenting as professional pundits on an incident that happened in a game. Like, I mean, where does this end? Like, there's talk, remember when Tiernan McCann, right, a huge high profile incident, got his hand touched by Darren Hughes and he fell down. Now, Colm O'Rourke and Kieran Whelan got lambasted for this and the treatment of an amateur player. What are they supposed to do? You know, and this is Tyrone rallying around their man, and it's this attitude. No one can see wrong in their own. Why can you not just say it? Tiernan McCann, Tyrone people, was an idiot to do what he did. He regretted it. He made a mistake. And Dear McConnelly made a mistake and shouldn't have done what he did. Why can't they just say that and the manager say it and move on from this? Is this Jose Mourinho attitude where you defend your player at all costs, even if he's done wrong, and try to deflect? And now I have people on Twitter and you see people all over the place saying, oh, classic Jim Gavin, Alex Ferguson distraction techniques. What is this nonsense story coming into GEA now that managers are on this higher level where they're distracting? No, they're not. Jim Gavin was being a pup there yesterday with that kind of stuff. He was being a brat, and his little faux protest by not speaking one-on-one to the media, absolute nonsense is what it was.
Yeah, and well, the point with Pat's plan, I will say that Pat seemed very excited about it, and him being from Kerry, you were thinking, oh, but listen, it's irrelevant where Pat's from or what Pat's intentions were, because Jim McConnelly pushed the linesman. That's it. So this talk of an imbalance is bullshit, frankly, because Carlo should have been playing 14 men. Like that was a noteworthy incident. Dear McConnelly, their best, Dublin's best player, should have been sent off. Yeah. So they have to highlight it the same way Matty Donnelly got highlighted when he allegedly points Chrissy McCaig. Derry should have been playing 14 men. These incidents should get highlighted. Yeah. The one Keane's talking about, absolutely right to bring up, and there is an imbalance there with Conor McManus getting kneed on the ground twice against Down. That's just a problem with different pundits. You know, Joe Brawley's there raving about this, you know, what Down were doing to Conor McManus. You know, but like, if there was actually proper pundits applying the rules properly, they would say, hang on, that should be a red card too. I don't think, I'm Dear McConnelly's biggest fan. I don't think it's some agenda against Connolly. It was black and white.
You are genuinely Dear McConnelly's biggest fan.
And this hurts me to say it. But it's black and white. He pushed the lines, man. There's nothing to talk about.
You make a great point there. And this was, I saw this clip of Brawley and Desi Dolan. I like Desi. I've met Desi a few times. But his analysis is so weak that it's very, very, very hard to listen to. And when you see him on the Sunday game last night, throwing Pat Splann under a bus, and I could expect it off Brawley. But Desi should have at least backed Pat Splann up there and had a bit of balance in that one, because I don't believe Desi thought what he's saying he thought. Why didn't he say it before this in any of his analysis? I didn't hear it, because you're perfectly right. Pat Splann being from Kerry is irrelevant.
Yeah.
That Sunday game came on the Sunday night. Sky had already, the Saturday night, Sky had read out the rules, and this is the next thing Jim gave out about, read out the rules. So you push a linesman and it's some sort of crime that a pundit might read out a rule that this is actually against the rules and he could be in trouble here, that this is meant to be a crime. Then Pat Spillane comes on the Sunday night. Imagine if they had ignored that. Or the Tiernan McCann thing, Colm O'Rourke and Kieran Whelan. Sure, where they're from, was that any relevance in their analysis of that? And this was meant to be a witch hunt as well. So Joe Brawley's cheap shot at Pat Spillane was completely unfair. And then you have Desi backing Joe up, and then you just have a nonsense of a piece where Joe's sticking the knife into Pat because there's a little bit of there's tension between two of them. That's very obvious. And then you've got nothing. You've absolutely got nothing then. So it makes no sense. Did Pat Splann did nothing wrong? Neither did Colm O'Rourke on that night on the Sunday game, and I would be the first one to criticise either one if they did.
Well, I went down yesterday, the press area in Crewe Park is below the stadium, so we sort of go down underneath into the tunnel area, and I heard that we weren't being allowed to. Well, originally it was broadcast and online, because broadcast and online are usually together for these things. So I thought, happy days, I'll just get out of here and go back up and write my own stuff. I don't have to listen to anything Jim Gavin has to say. It's just a waste of time, really. Because, what if he hadn't just talked about that game yesterday? It would have been so much better for him. No one would have really cared about it. We would have been talking about championship structures today instead of wrecking this all up again.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And
my
appetite even for talking about it now, it's kind of like Jesus, even getting back into this Connolly stuff. I'll just finish off one or two quotes he gave out actually about Sky Sports reading the rule book out against him. Again, does Jim McGuinness have a vested interest in going against Connolly? You know, do the Sky pundits now are on a witch hunt? So basically every pundit in broadcast is against Connolly for actually commenting on something. Everyone seems to be wrong except for Dear McConnelly in this instance. So then he says, in this case, I saw instances the same weekend and the weekend after of a similar type of reaction from players where they put their hands on officials, yet there was no comment on it from any quarter. So it's a very unbalanced approach. Now, this idea, I think it was Sean Armstrong put his arm around the referee when there was a decision made. Like, players do that all the time. You're told to plow off the referee. Managers would even ask you to do something like that. Like, to actually even put that in the same category as what Dermot O'Sullivan did. I hear some Dublin trolls trying to do it.
It's completely that point now really annoys me. That's completely ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. Like, on several occasions, you know, people are talking to referees, they're doing it. It's a completely different manner to how Connolly did it. And I hate going on and on about this incident because it was done, we've spoken about it already, but that point is flawed. It's ridiculous. As you said at the start, Jim Gavin should have just, his first line, you know, we accept it, shouldn't have happened, move on. And he should have just got on with things. It's actually really, really out of character. I'm very surprised with the whole thing, to be honest, because Jim Gavin's whole thing up to now has been, talking to the media is of no benefit to Dublin, so I don't really want to do it. That's his philosophy. Anything that he feels that in any way will impact upon his team or their chances of success, he doesn't want to know about it. And fair play to him. And he fulfills his media duties by saying absolutely nothing all the time. So I'm just astonished. Unless this is some sort of a tactic by him where he actually just wants to get out of doing some of these media duties after a game because he just couldn't be arsed doing them because he thinks they're a complete waste of time. That's the only theory I can come up with, because Jim Gavin is a very thoughtful man. He's very organised. He's extremely disciplined. He has a reason for doing this. It's not an emotional thing from him. You know, it's not an emotional reaction to the situation. So he has thought about this. He has maybe decided that this is the time to do it early in the championship. Get this ban in with the media early doors. Get it out of the way. I won't have to do any of this crap again. We can go back into our camp. We can do what we do and get as best prepared as we can. And there won't be, Dublin won't be in the papers. No one from the Dublin camp will be in the papers. No manager will be in the papers talking about anything. It's the only thing I can come up with because it's complete rubbish.
Yeah, complete rubbish. And just finally, Conan, he got so juvenile during his little kind of piece that he said he received advice from senior counsel that if we did pursue the case, we would have won. Yeah. Only Dermot didn't want to do that. So, like, I mean, how juvenile do you get to say, it's almost like, well, if we played you, we'd beat you anyways. Yeah, you know, like back in primary school when you, like, if you're coming out with that, it's a sad day.
I would have caught you only my shoelaces were untied.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like pretending, like, you know, I can't believe that. I mean, why would you go seek advice from senior counsel if Connolly doesn't want to pursue it anyway? Surely you should just ask him first before getting advice. Maybe, I don't know, maybe did they pay money for senior counsel? Maybe someone just came forward and gave him some sort of advice, but it seemed like they went sort of a roundabout way for Connolly just to say, nah, I'm not interested.
It's funny enough, there's people out there that can give you advice on anything, whether you want it or not.
Yeah, well, that's true. Listen, lads, we'll have to leave there because I fear, like me, we're bored out of our eyes talking about this. And Kevin McKernan is on the line after an unbelievable win on Saturday night against Monaghan. Kevin, it's safe to say no one outside your squad thought that result was going to happen.
Yeah, I think you know, we looked after the game towards the semi-final against Monaghan, and you know, the whole cliche, you can't look further than what's in front of you, and we didn't, in fairness, you know, Mag. But I think the confidence that came from that, and I think the whole factor of people just talking about Tyrone and Monaghan on the final, it sort of didn't sit well with a few of us, and particularly from last year's defeat, there was a whole lot of hurt after a 19-point defeat in the Ulster Championship. It was pretty embarrassing, to be honest. And I think, you know, that was lingering there in the squad as well. And I think quietly confident we were, you know, sort of probably a totally different team compared to what we had in Monaghan in terms of personnel, five or six men, and also then the confidence of getting a few wins. And, you know, it spoke for itself come Saturday evening, you know.
What is there something kind of special happens in a down player's head when coming off a win? It doesn't take much to tap into that kind of confidence that's there in you, does it?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, everybody likes to, you know, winning games, and I think, you know, when you're winning, you can see a whole lot of positives. But I think the big thing we took away from Armagh was how much we could improve further. And, you know, Eamon was very sort of pragmatic in how he looked at it in terms of, you know, there's so much more in our team, and we could see that. And I suppose it was just a matter of tightening things up and looking towards Monaghan with our confidence gained from Armagh, along with you know, an improved performance, which we got on Saturday night.
You've been written off a lot of the year. Like, the big story, I talked to Caelan Mooney and I was talking to him last week after the 2 weeks ago after the Armagh game. You were really written off, and like, you would have been looking at that from the outside because you were with St Mary's after winning the Sigerson. It wasn't as big a disaster as it looked because you were missing a lot of players, and when they got you back and the Kilcoo lads back, suddenly your results started to improve. So you were kind of missing some of your big players.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, it was probably the fact that, you know, people don't see, you know, a lot of things written and whatever, but at the end of the day, if you don't have your full deck, you know, at your disposal, we had a lot of men last year where you were down the two, our goalkeeper, Niall Donnelly's come into the team this year in midfield, you know, so we were four or five really strong options better off than last year, and I think then, you know, in terms of the league this year, we were getting closer and closer to that team that we, you know, we know was competing well and will compete well, and you know, it's just strengthens our squad now as well with our bench, which has, you know, come on and really added to the team in terms of getting over the line against Armagh and Monaghan.
Right, okay. Do you play a really nice brand of football, Kevin? Do you do much work on it? Because obviously you get bodies back, but instead of breaking, running the ball forward, you like to let it go and get it inside to Harrison pretty soon.
Well, I suppose when you're winning and you're competing well in games like that, you know, people pick up on how we're playing. And I suppose when the results weren't going well, you know, it was all dim and gloom. You know, so I suppose you can take the positives from how we're playing. You know, again, yes, we're getting men back, but I suppose every team is in a certain way. But yeah, we're definitely happy with how things are going. And again, we'll look closer again at how we can improve going forward. But yeah, I think we can be very adaptable in our approach. And I suppose it's trying to get that sort of disciplined look on how a game's moving. If it's there to be kicked, it's kicked. If it's not, it's wrong, you know.
Yeah, just to leave it up to the players themselves probably to decide on the field. Talk to us about your own role in the team then, because you're kind of playing the Colm Kavanagh role. I think we call it the Colm Kavanagh role. He's kind of the first midfielder to play that, you know, really defensive role. You seem to get forward a little bit more than the Armagh game. In the Armagh game, you didn't venture much outside the 45.
Yeah, I think you boys were giving off about that, maybe. That it didn't get up the field very much. But no, listen, I think, no, a certain, you know, definitely going forward a bit more, or you find yourself in that position. And I just think, you know, come on, and they just, it's the couple of players that we had that got involved. And, you know, again, as you spoke about Colm Kavanagh, how well he plays for Tyrone, but again, I don't know, different setup as well, probably in terms of how they meet men at a certain point in the pitch or whatever. You know, it's so tactical at the minute of the game. And I think someone spoke, that was Mickey Hart during the week, about how your game's just evolving and people just need to go with it. And, you know, again, I don't know, someone came up with a stat there that's probably, I think it is, the highest scoring championship in recent time, you know. So the whole thing, you know, it can be glorified to be in very doom and gloom and whatever through people's comments, but again, it's a good thing. The attacking side of things are starting to pick up again in championship.
Yeah, well, we were saying you were too good, that nobody that can kick points as good as you should be spending his whole time inside the 45.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but listen, I suppose, you know, you just do your bit for the team, and it's not really a full-on get back and stay there. It's just sort of mingling around sort of from midfield towards the defence and trying to be an extra body. And it's probably not in terms of making tackles. It's filling space and trying to ensure that we have that bit of cover. But yeah, everyone's doing it. You know, as you say, Colm Kavanagh, in terms of Donegal, they were doing the same as well. So listen, I think it's just a matter of doing your bit for your team. And you know, come Saturday evening there, you're just glad to get a down jersey and get out the other side of the result, and you sort of, you could see the scenes at the end, what it means to down paper. So it's just nice to get that back going again as well.
Yeah, was it with St Mary's that you started playing this kind of sweeper role? Because that's when it first came to my attention. I remember seeing the final, you were back a lot, but that was against the wind where your backs were to the wall. You know, you seemed to continue on that role then with Down. Is that where it all started?
I probably played that type of role, you know, before. I played half back for the day in 2010 and that, and you know, defensive shape there. But I think this year, yeah, it was Mary's. You're sort of, you know, again, we were coming up against big teams in the Sigerson in terms of DCU, a lot of firepower up front, and against actually one of our first games was NUAG. Damon Comer was in the forward line. And, you know, yeah, it's very naive in this day and age to leave the space that's before for top forwards like that. And I suppose if you're looking at it from a forwards aspect, it's not a you know, a positive thing. But in terms of you know, your setup, your, and keeping yourself in the game for St Mary's, it was all about for us to give ourselves that platform to compete. And I think, you know, throughout the campaign it developed as well. You had a lot of guys that were filling different, you know, against DCU, down in DCU, you know, gave us a chance there. And then towards the weekend, you know, you had UCC and then obviously in the final. So yeah, it worked well. And again, it was complemented by a lot of good young players from Tyrone that will probably come up against in a few weeks' time. But yeah, it was a nice system that we had against the Marys, and it worked nicely now to get through that as well.
Yeah, you've lost the captaincy this year. Well, I don't know if you've lost it. It's been changed anyways. What was there a reason behind that?
No, listen, you know, last year, to be honest, to do that, it was a lovely thing. But again, we off the pitch had a lot of things going on. I became a father as well, and I'm back at university doing my degree. So when you mix and match, you know, all of that, and then your on-field commitments and training, there's probably a lot there. But again, last year, you know, with a whole lot of other things that were being dealt with, and I suppose as captain, you're trying to take that on board and make things better for the players, and the run of defeats wasn't boding well, probably putting a whole lot of pressure on myself. So, you know, being relieved of that duty this year, and Eamon Kenneth and me, and was very open. And last year, maybe it wasn't a great decision on their behalf, that, you know, they realised what, you know, what I was trying to you know, deal with off the pitch, and trying to balance everything there. And I suppose, you know, this year we've given it to Darren, and there's no better man. And, you know, we've talked in the past few years about having more leaders, and, you know, it's not in terms of leaders and voice, but leaders on the pitch. And I think on Saturday night we had that all over the pitch. And, you know, there's no better man than Darren in terms of you know, going in for a ball and showing that leadership and drive coming out of defence. So a great man for the job. And I think, you know, this year we've been really pushing on towards the final.
It was actually a bad year to be captain of Down. You know, it was a bit of a disastrous year. But again, the same problem with Down. Caelan Mooney didn't commit. A couple of others didn't commit. You know, this is a big problem in Laois, the county I'm from, getting fellas to commit. Because I was reading that Conor Harrison dropped off the panel for a couple of years to go to New York. It always seems to be an issue in Down with lads leaving and coming, and there always seems to be some sort of an issue.
Listen, you know, a lot of it's been made of yeah, I think there's something going to be done this year in terms of, you know, a survey of the commitments of inter-county football. And, you know, I think we can be very narrow-minded and look at it saying, you know, playing county football is the be-all, end-all. And, you know, a lot of guys, and it's a great thing. I've done it for 10 years now, and it's fantastic. But, you know, other boys have other things that they want to do in terms of their career, in terms of, you know, Keelan come back from Australia last year, you know, to get himself a full-time job, to get into things and, you know, into real life, which was, you know, masked by what happens over in Australia where, you know, you're a professional athlete, you come back here. I think that's something probably the GA need to look at in terms of what capacity that the support players, like, it's not just, you know, in terms of Down, like, we've had Martin Clark, Jamie O'Reilly and Keelan Mooney. You know, and really on Saturday night we should have had Jamie O'Reilly and Marty involved, and, you know, unfortunately we didn't. But, you know, I think it's something, you look at Tommy Walsh down in Kerry, you know, all the players have come back, and, you know, I think it's something that can be looked at in terms of that, you know.
Yeah, I know it must be difficult, and even trying to get back over the disappointment of not making it out there, which a lot of them don't as well. I'm sure that kind of, you know, and then the pressure, I spoke with Caelan about this, the pressure then of coming back to your county and being expected to be the man to rescue the whole thing must be really difficult for them.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, like people just think this is, oh, he puts his football boots on. It's not just Keelan, it's any top class player, you know, that has come back from that. You know, it's not as easy just going out and performing, you know, in which I think where you're dealing with, you know, that exposure or the pressure of it weighing down, never mind club and county. But, you know, it's a huge day. I think, you know, boys can't turn down the opportunity of being a professional over there. But I think in terms of coming back here and filtering back into society, I think, you know, it's a totally different lifestyle compared to Australian. I think it could be looked at, definitely.
Yeah, come here. So you're doing teaching degree now in St Mary's Belfast. You are an electrician. How did this all come about? How did you fall in? You always wanted to be a teacher, I was reading. So how did you end up being an electrician?
Yeah, listen, probably, you know, coming off the back of my A-levels in school, we won the Hogan Cup in 2006. The level results probably suffered as a result of that, and it was always something that lingered with me that, you know, I'd finished business and everything, but, you know, it was a family business here with my father, and I always wanted to do that as well. So, you know, I've got my trade behind me, and I suppose probably the run to the final in 2010, and support and a wee bit of influence on younger generations. You could see, you know, the effect that football has on a positive role model, and you know, it irked at me that I never went and did the teaching, and it's, you know, something now that I look back on, go on, it's the best decision of my life, to take a step away from the trade that I had and went for teaching. And you know, I'm finished my degree now, I'm on the lookout for work over the summer for next year. So yeah, it's been positive, and you know, I think it's something again, you know, my this been working at suffering as a result of football, and then you're chasing yourself now as a 28, 29 year old going towards a degree. But this has all worked out great now, and you know, it's all very positive.
Yeah, I went back and did a master's in journalism when I was 34. It's a huge step, and it's a huge kind of new environment to try and get back into the whole college mode when you're way older than everybody else in your class.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed, you know, you're probably going back into uni and a totally different, you know, a 19, 20 year old who's, you know, just fresh out of school, and you know, they're cutting their teeth at you know, uni football and different things like that. And I think the uni football this year, it was great as it was, but again, it added a whole lot of time management things with county football, family life, and then stuff as well. So yeah, it was good. I enjoyed getting back and studying. And I think it was actually Alan O'Mara, he was saying about company when you're that wee bit older. Actually, really, you know, really enjoyed it, and went to it when I was 18, 19, and enjoyed it. And I'm out the other side of it this week, so yeah, it's been nice.
Listen, Kevin, thanks very much for taking the call.
Perfect, catch you, take care.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? Mm. It happens, yeah. and it does happen. Yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, and look, he didn't lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, backing club and county.
We'll start off with Down and Monaghan, lads, because there's not an awful lot to analyse out of the Westmeath Dublin game. It was so one-sided, it was like just a turkey shoot. It was embarrassing. But we will talk about it a little bit. But God, Down really impressed me on Saturday night. They really impressed me, like a good kicking team. They actually seem to have the balance between getting numbers back, but also breaking, but not breaking with a running game, breaking with a kicking game. Like, yeah, it was beautiful to see. We haven't seen that counter-attack in a while. I don't think we've really seen it before.
No, we haven't. It was brilliant. And it surprised you at times, because they could, you know, they turn it over, they might break over the halfway line, and the man on the ball could have two support runners beside him, but yet he was, particularly O'Hagan, the right half-back.
Yeah, the captain.
Yeah, he was banging it in there. So, like, in fairness to him, you could see when it works, it absolutely cuts teams to shreds. And Harrison at full forward was an absolutely brilliant target man for him, for, you know, until he went off injured. I mean, he was the difference between Down winning that game and losing it, just because he was able to get them up the pitch. Win balls kind of in dangerous areas that he sometimes didn't really even have a right to win them. Like, he was winning brilliant ball, particularly when you consider he was up against Drew Wiley, who's widely regarded as, you know, one of the top fullbacks in the country. So hugely impressed with him and how he performed, and hopefully looked like he kind of tweaked his hamstring, so hopefully he's available for the next day.
Yeah,
because
hopefully,
if they miss him, he's a big loss. But yeah, a beautiful style of football. They dropped a lot of bodies back, but they have they've lovely ball carriers and good movers there. Ryan Johnson particularly is so silky on the ball, you know, just played the link role really, really well, and they were very organised defensively. Like, it's hard to find a fault in a lot of what they did. It was a really, really good performance from them.
It really was. It's Dara O'Hanlon, actually, the wing back.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He almost reminded me of Aidan O'Rourke with Armagh, as in he's predictable what he's going to do. He's going to give a ball off the outside of his right boot into Harrison. And the great thing about that is, and this is an argument I have with Leash an awful lot, you've got Donny Kingston and you've Evan O'Carroll in there. I'd back those two against three. if you've given good diagonal ball where you're wrong foot in the sweeper, if there's one sweeper, back your two big, back a big man to be able to win that ball for you, and you're up there then, you know. And they really backed Harrison, and I couldn't believe how much ball he was winning off Drew Wiley. I've never seen Drew Wiley like absolutely ran ragged and beaten for strength and beaten in every department, yeah. Really,
the one ball he did win, I thought he was pretty harshly given a free against when he sort of threw Harrison over his shoulder.
But I know that one, but if you looked at the replay of that as well,
he had
a grab of Harrison's leg, and he was looking one direction, and Harrison had the ball in his hands the other side, so he didn't even know where the ball was, and then he fired Harrison on the ground and somehow got the ball. But look, it was a bizarre incident, but it just summed up the sort of I suppose the brazenness of Harrison. He was just in there battling for everything.
Yeah, it was great. It was like a wrecking ball, but
he can score too. Like, this is not just
a magnificent point off his left foot in the first half,
and
brilliant.
He did against Armagh as well, you know, off both feet. Like, I mean, this isn't just a brute that's put in there to win an initial ball. This fella seems to have everything. And I was talking to Kevin earlier on the show. He's another one of these lads. He dropped off the panel for a couple of years to go to New York. They Down seem to have a lot of these fellas, you know, that are around and then they're gone, and you're not really quite sure what Down team's going to be here. But they're definitely a good team. Definitely a good team now.
Well, it just shows you, though, it's sort of almost like the Michael Murphy effect. Whereas Armagh are like, the first game they put Charlie Vernon on him, thinking, right, he'll match him for physicality. He's big enough. He's strong enough. And he got absolutely taken to the cleaner. So what happened? They had to move one of their little jinky wing backs back to Markham, because it simply, his movement was so good. Armagh needed to get somebody faster, someone a lot lighter, just to try and keep up with him. And I think the same mistake a lot of people make with Michael Murphy. He's too fast. They think he's big, let's get a big man on him, but they don't realise how well he can move. And that's exactly what was happening. He was running back and forward, winning every type of ball. And I think you were talking about his left foot to score, but the one off the right, where he was coming in from the left wing, didn't even seem to look at the post, didn't even look where Drew Wiley was, just thought, I'm going to have a go at this, and it curled straight over.
Yeah,
it was a magnificent performance.
And the two Johnsons, I'm glad you mentioned Ryan, he's such a clever player. There's a cockiness to the two of them, isn't there? There's an arrogance to the two Johnsons, and in different ways. One's just arrogant the way he nonchalantly carries the ball around. The other's little blondie lad is arrogant the way he'll take you on, and it's just the way they carry themselves, you know what I mean?
But they're winners, you know, they're winners at club level, Down, and look, they've kind of brought that sort of, I don't know, they've brought that sort of mentality into the Down team since they've been involved sort of in the league, and it's certainly in the Championship they've been excellent. But you're right, like, it is that sort of it does take a sort of a certain character to, like, every single time Jerome Johnson got the ball, he went at his man every time, even at times you're watching going, what is he at here? There's about four Monaghan lads around him, but he was still able to drive through and weave, and he was, look, fair enough, he got turned over maybe on a couple of occasions, but he was still constantly asking questions of Monaghan defenders, and that's really all you can ask for from an inside, from your inside forward, is he going to, if he's showing hard, particularly his, that type of a player, he's showing hard for the ball, he's taking men on, and he's asking questions of them, and, you know, like, he was, I thought he had another look. Everyone for Down played well, really, so you couldn't fault any of them, but he caught the eye. I just thought Ryan Johnson, to me, just that link role he played around the middle, picking up ball completely unmarked, which was surprising. Monaghan, I would have thought, would have had somebody detailed to try and pick him up, because he is so silky on the ball. He's got great turn of pace as well. He can just carry the ball and move and drift past players in that middle third. And then he wasn't trying anything daft. You know, he was just, that was his role in the team, was picking it up kind of deep, drifting forward, holding possession, and getting them up to the field in an organised manner, and giving their defence a bit of a breather as well, which is a huge, huge thing when they were playing such a high energy game.
Yeah, they just seemed to have all the time in the world on the ball. It was a funny one, because I was obviously watching the RT coverage, and another criticism of Desi Dolan is that he says they were going really bad in the league, and then all of a sudden something happened and they started getting results. Like, I mean, the Kilcoo lads came back into the squad anyways, for starters, and Kevin McKiernan came back from St Mary's after winning the Sigerson, and I'm pretty sure Caelan Mooney had been injured early on in the league. They got these big players back that have got that confidence, and they transformed their team halfway through the league. It wasn't that I don't really know how they did this, it was they got really quality players back in, and they got a great result against Meath, and that's all Down need then, just to get themselves right. Our lads are back, we've got a win on our belt, and suddenly that's how their season changed.
Yeah, like, but they didn't win their last three league games, so it wasn't like, you know, they went into the Championship off the back of this amazing form. Like, it was just, I think they scrapped a win against Armagh, caught Armagh a little bit cold, And then, as I said last week, once Down get their tails up, they're a different sort of animal. They're real cocky. Them boys, like McKiernan would tell you, like, them boys would believe that they're going to beat Monaghan. And you look at it and think, Jesus, Monaghan aren't actually that good anymore. The hindsight is 20-20. It's the same as I was saying to Keane earlier. You look at Tyrone Donegal and think, yeah, Tyrone are obviously far better than Donegal. But I watched the first 20 minutes of that game, the Monaghan Down match. I watched it a day later and thought, there's no way Monaghan can lose this match because Kieran Hughes was dominating.
Yeah.
But then Jack McKiernan, I think he let them down a little bit. He slowly just sort of went out of the game. He didn't, as you said, Keane, went like Johnson winning ball inside for Down. He wasn't doing that anymore. Like, Monaghan didn't need him out around the 45, hand passing the ball. They needed him inside alongside McManus, doing dirty work, winning tough ball, and actually giving them a platform. And I think he sort of drifted out too much for them.
Yeah, he was drifting out, but he's gone off the ball completely. Like, I didn't even feel standing over that free at the end that he was going to get it. I just didn't fancy him at all.
Should McManus not have called right there and said, this is a big score? I know it was a completely left footed shot, but should he not just come over and said, not this one, we need this?
He would have had to go off the outside of his boot, I'd say, McManus, wouldn't he, for that? It was that little bit over to the side.
I'm sure as soon as the ball was kicked, McManus probably said, oh, for God's sake, why didn't I go and kick yeah. it? Like, that's just
but
the
way
it goes.
You can't overrule yeah. someone who's
you make those calls. You do make those calls in a game when you're the primary free taker. Sometimes you just think, no, the best call is for, as he's got a, you know, he's a higher percentage shooter from there than I will be, so you give him the shot. But look at it's all hindsight, isn't it? But it's just interesting, yeah, the perspective or the perception you can have of a team afterwards. Like, I mean, I wouldn't be inclined to blow Down up too much. It was a magnificent performance from them. I'd be very surprised if they were able to repeat that level of performance, because if they were able to perform at that level week in, week out, then they would have been up at the very top of Division 2 looking at promotion.
Yeah, but we've seen them do this before, Keane. We've seen them spark into action like 2010.
I think we're clutch. I don't buy
it's not as good a team as that.
No, I don't. Well, I don't really buy into that anyway. I mean, like, there's not this inherent thing in teams. It annoys me a bit. I don't buy it. I could be proven wrong the next day, although I expect Tyrone to beat them quite comfortably, actually, to be honest, particularly if Harrison ain't playing.
Do you think there's an inherent thing in counties, though, where they do sort of have a bit more of a swagger than other counties?
Yeah. Possibly, but there's too long of a gap in Down from when they've actually won anything. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of these guys growing up wouldn't have ever seen Down do anything. You know, it's like it's going to be a problem in Meath, because Meath have done nothing in so long. There's generations of footballers in Meath who've never seen Meath do anything. They're only told about fairy tale stories from their grandparents and their parents. Like, that's pretty much all you hear about. So unless you have a generation of players that actually see success, watch success, follow success, that spurs them on. Like, when you have a couple of generations where that doesn't occur, it's very, very difficult. That's why Tipperary are always so bloody dangerous in any sport, because they're always winning in hurling. So lads who play football can look at it and say, well, sure, there's an All-Ireland medalist living down the road from me. My cousin won an All-Ireland. Like, there's just winners all around them. It's a different sport, but they're still winners. So there's that belief that, like, people from my area have done this in the past. They've been doing it. I've seen them do it. You know, it's just when you have that generational gap, I think it's a lot harder to lift the thing. Like, you look at, you know, there's loads of success stories. Like, Down were very successful in the 60s, Cavan were very successful in the 40s and 50s, but like, it just,
you want to be old to be seen,
you
that,
know, like, that's the sort of stuff that just happens for too long. Like,
yeah, no,
too
that's
long of a gap.
That's true. No, I agree with all that. We'll talk about Kevin McKernan, obviously, because he was on the show and he spoke a bit about his new role. But we talked after the Armagh game that he was too defensive, because he's so accurate. But like, he gets up twice and he scores 2 points like that, and like, you can't use him in too defensive a role. You just can't. He just, not when you can kick long range points, and against defensive systems, those lads are worth their weight in gold, you know. And he kicked those two, relieved huge pressure, and then suddenly you're wondering, why is this fella playing in the Colin Kavanagh role, who kind of has to play that role, you know, because he wouldn't be able to do what McKernan can do going forward. So, you know, it makes sense for him to evolve in his position into adding that bit onto it.
Yeah, and as the team develops, as Down get more game time, look, they're guaranteed now another two games. So it'll be just interesting to see if that does develop, if they can keep that structure. And that can happen in a championship season. You kind of find your balance, and team players can develop game to game. And look, there's no doubt about it. I'm sure McKernan's well renowned as an attacking midfielder, really making those driving runs. So it's been a bit of a transformation as such. I know he would have played a lot of his underage football maybe in the half back line and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it is just a little bit of an interesting transformation that he has played in that role. So you'd have to suspect that he's just kind of a very intelligent footballer. He's got plenty of experience now at this level, good communicator in there. And in fairness to him, you would have to say he timed his runs forward really, really well to get onto the end of the move. And he backed himself and he showed great courage and leadership at the time, because it was particularly the one in the second half was magnificent, because they had kind of gone a bit of a spell without getting a score, and they just needed, it was a good settler for them, and it was sort of an inspirational score to be kicking one from outside the 50, outside your boot. Like, it's just it lifts a team, particularly when it is, you know, the leader who's doing it.
Yeah, no, look, there's no doubt about that. Like, when he just comes on late into the play. The last thing I want to talk about before we move on to Dublin and Westmeath is the penalty, right? Because I'm kind of unsure about this, because it goes Colin Walsh went to slap the ball and his momentum brought him forward and he was sidestepped and he tripped up. And, you know, the down player then, instead of jumping over him, tripped up over Colin Walsh. Now, Colin Walsh didn't mean to foul him, but he probably did foul him. So in that, it's a really weird one in that scenario. You wonder, is it a penalty or is it not? Or, you know, what is a foul? He just fell on the ground, you know, but he did trip him up. Yeah. So it's a difficult one to call. Maybe the referee got it right, but it's very, very unfortunate on Walsh.
Oh, it's very unfortunate on Walsh. I mean, look, it was accidentally. He didn't mean to trip him up in the manner that he did. But nonetheless, the way I kind of look at them is, if Colin Walsh didn't tackle the ball, he didn't dispossess the man, he didn't really check his momentum hugely. If Colin Walsh wasn't there and didn't fall down the ground in front of him, the down player wouldn't have fallen over. So the down player was obviously impeded by Walsh and was fouled.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I look at it. I know he didn't mean to do it, but sure, a lot of the time if you're going for a ball and you're a little bit late, you don't necessarily mean to foul the man, but you do. So I put it down to that. Like, it's like the scenario where the corner back and corner forward are running out for the ball, and the corner forward is tripped, gets his heels clipped from behind by the corner back, and the two of them fall over. Some referees just play on, and other referees give the free in. It's just one of those where it's a very split second call from a referee. I think this one was I think the referee got this one right. I think what Monaghan look would be most disappointed about is, despite the fact that Rory Beggin's kick out was poor, the cover tackle from Drew Wiley in that incident was very, very un-Monaghan like. He was slipped quite easily to allow the Monaghan man through, you know, in on goal. It's just very unlike him, you know. He's usually such a strong tackler, and it was just a reflection maybe of the day that he was having, that sometimes they can happen. Like, we talk about Conor Moynagh the last day making a poor tackle against Monaghan, and this time around it was the Monaghan defender making a poor tackle on a down attacker. So in these games, they're on a knife edge, they're so competitive, that it's one missed tackle and that can kind of cost you a game.
Yeah, Conan, penalty or not?
Yeah, I think it's a penalty. I think Keane summed it up perfectly there. But just to finish off, like, I mean, Eamon Burns deserves serious credit. I mean, he was getting hung drawn and quartered from every...
He doesn't inspire confidence in you, does he?
He doesn't, but like, even something as simple then as Kevin McKiernan, I'm wondering, have they moved him back there because of the way they're playing? I mean, he's somebody who might take too much out of the ball. He'll run and run and run with it all day. But if they move him back to around the halfback line where it's a bit more of a launch pad, it maybe forces him to kick it more. And then he's got big lads like Peter Turley in that who aren't going to take too much out of the ball in the middle. So when you have him further back, it's going to encourage him to let it into Harrison a bit more. Something simple like that, I think, deserves a bit of credit, because you look at Mooney, you look at O'Hanlon, and now McKiernan coming from there. That's sort of where Down are making waves.
Yeah, no, okay, right, that's great stuff. We'll leave that there. Tom Cribben had some very interesting comments after the game yesterday, lads. He was talking about that he wanted to use an ultra-defensive tactics for the third season in a row against Dublin. And he says this, he says, the players didn't want it. They wanted to have a go. You might ask why we didn't do that today, but it was because the lads wanted to have a go. We felt that we were ready to have a go. All this, have a go, have a go. So they only went with one sweeper instead of two. They didn't swarm the defence zonally like they did the last 2 years, you know, where you'll have two sweepers and you'll have three lads one side and three lads another side, and they're zonal, they're watching, they're all inside the 45. They didn't do that. And Dublin just split through them. And sure, it's so obvious. Like, I mean, that's what's going to happen. And you had, like, I mean, we give Desi Dolan another shout out saying that Westmeath should go for them this year. like, what does that even mean? Like, I mean, we've seen teams, I thought we were gone away from these turkey shoots, that Carlow didn't do that and they were in the game till half time, and I went to the game, it was watchable. That game yesterday was not watchable. Now, so I don't know why this notion seems to be seeping back into teams that you just have a go. You'd Eamon or you'd Eugene McGee and the Independent Lynch and Carlow for not having a go. What kind of nonsense is this, lads? So look, there's a 31 point defeat, and you know what, in a small way I think Cribben is going, there you go now, because the Westmead public telling him to have a go. We don't want to go to Croke Park to watch that. At Croke Park, a point down they were last year at half time. They were cheered in off the field. Cheered in off the field. This year the game's over.
Did so they like, have I a mean, go this year?
They're set up, Conan. Now I understand, you'll obviously say they didn't have a go because they were hammered, but their setup was just once, and it didn't, like, you could clearly see last year from the throw-in, the Westmead forwards are running back, yeah, like a la Tyrone or Donegal. They didn't do that. Like, you were at the game, and I don't think they did. Like, they left themselves wide open to the kick pass, and the one thing that will always kill you against Dublin, if you don't cut out that kick pass, you're screwed, because there's going to be runners off either shoulder and you're a goner.
Well, even taking it back a step from that, you have to win, you have to get your hands on the ball, and Westmead were absolutely annihilated in the middle third of the field,
yeah,
on, you know, on restarts. So it doesn't matter, if you want to have a go, you need to have the ball. Like, having a go is getting the ball into the opposition's half, killing the ball, and playing the game in the opposition's half for the next 4 or 5 plays. Win the opposition's kick out and attack them. Win the opposition's kick out, attack them. That's having a go and dominating and pressing a team and being in a match.
Yeah, like Dublin do.
Like Dublin do. And like dominant teams do in games. Look, it's just a bit ludicrous to think that Westmead were ever going to do that. Like, Westmead needed to play their percentages game, which was keep it nice and tight and try and hit on the counter-attack as best they could when the opportunity presented itself. They needed to hold on to possession. They needed to shorten the game, if that makes sense, the time that the ball was in play. So what they need to do was limit the amount of time that Dublin have possession, because pretty much every time Dublin have possession, they're nearly always going to get a shot off. So what Westmead needed to do was get the ball, hold possession for as long as possible, even if that was around the middle of the third going nowhere, even if it was going backwards, it doesn't matter. Limit the amount of time that Dublin have in possession on the attack and work your way into the game that way. Get confidence on the ball, have a go and move it forward, and any time you lose possession, lose it high up the field without too many bodies gone forward.
Yeah,
and limit the game like that. Keep it low scoring. That's the only chance they had. They're never going to beat them any other way. So I understand the point. And in fairness to Cribben, I do suspect that he's kind of going, fair enough, lads. If you want to have a go, that's brilliant. We're all in this together. Let's have a go. We'll play the way you want to play. This is how we're going to set up, lads. Are you all happy with that? Grand.
Yeah, I'd say that was exactly it. But even we talked about Down and their tactics of going 2-2 against 3 and backing them. Early in the game, if Kieran Martin's able to take on his man and score a point, I think he got 2 early ones. Heslin rose up into the air, caught one over above Keane O'Sullivan. Like, I mean, Westmead have 2 lads tailor-made to get that ball in early. And let's see, we saw none of that outside of that first 10 minutes. And like Keane said, they got absolutely destroyed on their own kickouts. Now, it's not an easy thing to do. We're not going to turn around and say winning your own kick-out against Dublin is an easy thing to do, because they've got the full press. They're making you go long. And Dublin broke. Dublin weren't even trying to catch the Westmead kick-out. They were breaking it hard. And the amount of breaks they won, how they dominated Westmead's own kick-out. But Westmead continuously went straight down the middle,
yeah,
and it wasn't working, but he continued to do it, and I couldn't understand it. There has to be another ploy on kickouts to have a move where there's a block move and stick it out to the right half backer. Didn't look like there was any idea on the kickout except for goals straight down the middle, and they were being destroyed on it.
It seemed to me Westmeath got off very scot-free in the talk of all these B championships and whatever. People said it was an embarrassing day for football. It was an embarrassing day for Westmeath yesterday. It wasn't good enough. Like, Carlow lost by 12 points, made a decent game out of it for as long as they could. Westmeath wiped the floor with everybody in Division 4.
Yeah,
absolutely waltzed through it, won the final by 13 points, and they were getting by 31 points. And then when things were going wrong, didn't even look to change anything. The kickout's a perfect example. There was a stage, I put up a picture on Twitter Dublin had two defenders, Westmeath had three attackers. Dublin were completely pushing up for Westmeath's kicks.
Dublin robbed that off Kerry, by the way. That's what Kerry did to Dublin. And Dublin do it now. And okay, fair enough. I'm not saying that's a criticism of Dublin, but that's where they learned that. And they're doing that now, where they're putting a huge amount of pressure on the kick out. There's no doubt about that. But it still seemed a bit of a silly one to keep going that straight, direct route down the middle.
Particularly when you're going down the middle. I mean, if you're under pressure on your own kick out, you need to be putting the ball out to the wing. You need to be hitting the wing. So at least if you don't win your own kick out, it's way out on the wing. You can maybe get more bodies in and get pressure on the opposition when they win the ball, and you have them confined, you have them hemmed in at least along the sideline. You know, if you keep putting it down the middle, any time a man wins a break, he can go left and right. If it's right out tight to the sideline, look, fair enough, you win it yourself, you're in the same scenario, but at least you're sort of limiting the damage the opposition can do very swiftly. You know, particularly with the mark, Dublin man catches the ball down the middle, he can run straight down the middle of your defence. So, you know, that causes all sorts of pandemonium. And in fairness to Westmeath, look, they just, you know, in fairness, Cribben has done a very good job with them over the last number of years, and he's made life difficult for Dublin for large periods of the game, so I wouldn't really be overly critical of him. I take what he says on face value, that his players wanted to have a go and he's facilitated that, so I wouldn't have any criticism of him really for the tactical setup.
Conan is right, the players are getting off scot-free here now, because it's like it's Dublin versus these players hammered to beat, like this distraction of the B Championship. Westmeath players should be doing an awful lot better than 31 points. Westmeath are about, I thought the handicap was about fair, in around 13. You'd be expecting something in around that. Well, that wasn't good enough from Westmeath by any stretch of the imagination.
And especially what you said, Heslin won the first ball over Cian O'Sullivan putting their own. In fairness, Heslin didn't have the best of days.
Terrible game.
But they didn't try that ball enough. They didn't hit Martin enough. It was just this thrown together performance.
Well, I think the difference here now, if the Westmeath players were looking to have a go and their manager's coming out and saying that, the Westmeath players obviously felt maybe we have a chance of winning this game. I mean, otherwise, you know what I mean, like they wouldn't have been going down that route. They wouldn't have been insisting on their manager playing that way, so they felt they had a chance of winning the game. And what happened was Dublin started the game strongly, and Westmeath's spirit was broken, because in previous years it was all about containment and stay in the game and see what happens, kind of knowing you're going to lose, whereas now the players had a different mindset, thinking they were going to win. So what happens when you think you're going to win and you get a bit of a shock, their spirit was broken and everything fell apart. And that's just a reality. And they had no defence, they had no well-drilled defensive shape to get back into it, to just focus on something. And it can happen very often when you play a team. And it's just astonishing that Westmeath felt that way against Dublin. I mean, they should have been expecting this.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. When you go up to play Dublin in Croke Park, you should expect, we are going to be under serious pressure here today, and you should be expecting to be behind, to be battling, to be really struggling, to be fighting tooth and nail for every ball. That's what you should be expecting. Not expecting that, oh, we'll get these boys on the counter-attack, we'll catch them on the hop here today. Not going to happen. Not
going to
happen.
They were never going to win enough primary possession to have a go in that. Their best way of having a go was to start in a defensive shell and then have a go from that platform. Like, they were like Stephen Cluxton was always going to hit 1995 100% of kickouts. So straight away Westmeath were always on the defence. So they should have been set up for that from the off.
There was some screenshots there I was seeing during the game yesterday. Or was it Colin O'Rourke at half time showed Dublin's press, and they were going zonal, so they were almost goading Westmeath into different fellas. Now, they weren't tight on every fella. Alright, okay, that's grand, but if I go three times to midfield and I've lost every one of them, like, they were given enough space, you know what I mean? Go short to one of these lads, like, go short to him, and that's it. And what's the plan B if the midfield is being destroyed? And we've said on the show loads of times that if a team is pushing up on you all over the field, the odd time, drive that thing as far as you can down the middle. But you have to have some sort of a fetcher there. We have no presence in midfield. They have a very, very weak midfield. And you're coming up against Fenton. And if Fenton and James McCarthy are trying to break ball, you're not winning those balls. And it seemed like Westmeath were completely unprepared for the breaking ball, and Dublin had clearly worked on it, because Dublin are all over this full press, so they're expecting balls to go to midfield. So Dublin are all over this breaking ball, all over this. Like, and against Mayo, I remember last year in the Ireland final, Dublin were destroying Mayo on breaking ball. Dublin, I would say, are doing an awful lot of work on breaking ball, because they're not trying to catch the opposition's kickouts, they're punching it down, and it's unreal how many breaking balls they're winning. It's like they've got three or four extra players in around that breaking ball area, and other teams are not clued into what Dublin are doing with this.
Yeah, look, they've sort of evolved their style a little bit. I do agree with you. They've learned it from Kerry, and look, more to, you know, when a team sees how effective a tactic is against them, they do adopt it. And in fairness to Dublin, they have the big men around the middle, they have the pace and the aggression on the break, and they have just that strength on the ball that makes them very, very formidable. So you're right, look, Westmeath needed to come up with something, and I suppose what we're really talking about is further down the line teams that are going to be playing against Dublin.
It's going to be very interesting with teams playing against Dublin, because this is a very aggressive tactic.
It's a hyper aggressive tactic, yeah, but I think they'll also have learned from some of the stuff that may have happened in the Tyrone Donegal game last week with these kickouts over the top. I think they're going to have that covered as well. I think they're that well prepared that they'll have all bases covered.
Yeah, I think Jesus lads, it's just Fenton. He completely, and even James McCarthy, because if James McCarthy's trying to break off you, you're not going to feel it. He's 6'2" or 6'3". Even the weight of him coming down in your back trying to break it, you're not going to catch it clean. And these two monsters breaking it, and they're driving it back in the direction
it
came.
I'd just be interested to hear from Conan, who actually was, you know, standing there looking at it. Like, did Fenton and McCarthy hold in that central channel even when the ball was being kicked to the wing, or did they drive out to that wing as well to follow their man? Like, were they picking up the midfielders, or were they all just holding a zone?
They all had a zone, but those two were pretty central, and like McCaffrey abandoned, John Egan sort of pushed up more on McCaffrey, but McCaffrey was sort of abandoning him and going into his own little zone. Where now, I don't know Quinn too well, the Westmeath keeper. I don't know what his kicks are like. He could have hit that 45 a couple of times if he can reach that far in Croke Park. I don't know if that's realistic, but Dublin, yeah, were definitely all set up in their own little positions, and then that's why I think Daly was on the other wing, McCaffrey's on the other wing. They won a lot of breaks between them. The half forward came in, they seemed to have three or four pressed right up on the, I don't know if the short was on as much as you were saying it was, Willie. Like, it seemed, looking at it, like someone texted me saying, is the Westmeath keeper having a meltdown here or what? And he looked and I was like, I don't know what he can do other than hit that ball long where there was a couple of free men, but maybe he couldn't hit it that far.
Yeah, no, listen, it's all very interesting stuff. We don't want to be too critical of the Westmeath goalie, because I suppose driving it long to midfield in Division 4 might have worked an awful lot more than it would work against probably the best midfielder in the country.
I'd say he just was thinking, geez, how long can I take over this kick out, because it just keeps coming back in on me. I'm surprised he wasn't substituted with a torn quad or something. Would you mind if I
Yeah, I don't want any part of this. And he down under Hill 16 with having this nightmare as well. I'm sure he's been reminded about these kickouts. Right, listen, we've done enough there. We'll be back with performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me, you're looking
out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Performance of the weekend, lads. We'll be quick with this. Conor Harrison, we've talked about him. Obviously, unbelievable game. Really brought himself to national prominence. Winning ball, scoring points. It's almost like, where's this lad been all our lives? He seems to have everything. Now, we don't want to write him up as like an all-star yet, although he's had two brilliant games in a row, because we've seen Cathal McCarron in the league and he's completely lost his mojo altogether. So I don't know mentally what Harrison is like. In his interview after the match, he was fairly bullish anyway. He's the type of fella I might kind of like on my side, but he was unbelievable, and I'm just looking forward to seeing more of him. You're right, Keane, he did twinge the hamstring. And what are we at for an Ulster final, Conan? Are we 2 or 3?
July 16th.
July 16th is 26, so 3 weeks. Yeah, so he has a chance. If it was 2, I would say he had no chance. He still has a chance,
but it's not the sort of thing you'd like to be carrying into a game either. So hopefully it doesn't hinder him, because look, he was very, very impressive. Sort of an all action battler that you like up there, and he has the skill set to kick off both feet. So look, he was superb, and a brilliant performance from him. I suppose, look, you have to give him a mention. I know it was a heavy win for the Dubs, but Mannion was decent, you know. Decent being a complete understatement. Obviously,
but it was almost like bullying. I'd never give a flat track bully a performance of the weekend. Mannion, obviously, 8 from play is beyond belief for any forward. But like, I mean, it wasn't reality. It wasn't like they won the last quarter 2-12 to a point or something. Like, I mean, like if I was involved in a game
eight
like
points
that,
points isn't really good enough. You'd want to be scoring goals. Like, if you're scoring 8 points, you should. I'd rather see a lad get 2-6.
You'd have to give Mannion credit for 8 for play, because regardless of the lack of pressure that was on him, some of the points were of the highest order. Nice curlers with the left. He is very left. As well, to be fair, but he was at least Dublin would have to get some sort of nomination. But I don't know, 8 from play against that defence, like they had just given up. Like, I mean, I think one of his last points, he waltzed straight at goals and then saw a lad in front of him and actually had to go the long way around him and still went the long way around him and clipped it over. It was so easy for Mannion, who's a monster of a man, and the speed of him, it almost seemed like it wasn't fair.
And even Kieran Kilkenny, who was more or less just playing a real selfless role, he was popping a lot of ball off, he assisted a lot, but he was just hanging out the wing as well as part of this sort of system. They were trying to keep it as wide as possible for kickouts and for open play, but he racked up 1-3 as well from play.
First ever championship goal, I heard in the commentary, which was a surprise to hear from Kilkenny.
Well, that's because he usually just hand passes the ball.
but I know that, but he's in the Leinster championship key.
But to be fair, look, the Dubs gave an absolute masterclass yesterday in quick transfer of the ball from wing to wing and keeping width in the attack. Like, it was a masterclass in that regard.
And they're great to watch, but like that's okay. We all know Dublin are great to watch. That wasn't great to watch. They actually are.
Let's be fair about it. Just because of the high quality performance that they did put in.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about that. Kevin McKernan, obviously on the show, outstanding leader performance. Okay, this is not performance of the weekend. This is worst performance of the weekend. I want to give a mention to, and that's the umpires down at the far end of the goals for the Rory Beggan incident towards the end of the game, where Beggan clearly picked the ball up off the ground. The umpire had a bird's eye view and didn't bring this to the referee's attention whatsoever. Like, you could clearly see that Beggan had picked it up off the ground. And the referee, we didn't mention this, the new referee that was changed at half time played with Monaghan in the second half. He bloody played with them. And it's this whole kind of culture in the GAA, the team that's on the way back are going to get every break for over-carrying, and you know, the crowd gets on their back, and the team that's ahead gets none of these decisions. And it's almost like three lads surround a fella off a team that's on the way back and they're blown for a foul. If it happens the other end, it's blown for over-carrying. It's like, Jesus, how often do we see it? And it must be the emotion gets the better of referees.
Yeah, they get caught up in the momentum, and you can see the excitement that they have as well when they're giving it in the direction of the team who's chasing, and they start sprinting forward with them. But the Beggan one was inside the small square, no?
No, he handled it outside the small square. It should have been like a 14-yard free fouling the ball on the ground, because he picked it up the second time inside the square, but he's obviously entitled to pick it up inside the six-yard box. Final nomination.
Small parallelogram.
Small, whatever it is. Am I old school saying the six-yard box? Final nomination as is the Armagh forwards. We've much maligned Armagh forwards on this show. Well, we didn't malign them until they were talked off by Stephen McDonald. 20 points. Lads, that's all. Not too bad. Not too shabby. Jamie Clark got 3. Mernon got 1. Stephen Campbell came off the bench, obviously taught a lesson. He came on for Mernon. Can only assume after scoring 2 points he was injured after 39 minutes, and he scored 2 from play. And just from the highlights that we saw on the Sunday game, again, looked like some very nice style of play, nice kick passing into the forward line, you know, nice bit of movement, nice bit of silky skills from Jamie Clark. Stephen Campbell got a lovely one on the run. Loads of space seemed to open up, and maybe these Armagh forwards aren't as bad as we said last week.
Yeah, but as we all know on this podcast, if it's not shown live on TV, then it actually never happened.
Yeah, and that's true. And we're not going down the line of saying how good it was. Well, I almost said, well, on the highlights, it did look
20 points is impressive.
20 points no matter what way you look at it. We don't have to have seen the game for that.
I'm sure Stevie will tell us all about it on Thursday anyway. It'll be fine.
Yeah, okay, Stevie. Yeah, he will actually. He'll be in at that game. And actually, Oisín O'Neill, he was dropped, but Grugan seemed to have played very well. And Grugan and O'Neill were the two that he had been talking up as two new fellas. Oisín O'Neill obviously got dropped. He came on for Grugan after 69 minutes. But I have a huge because of our Thursday podcast, I don't know if you listen to it, Keane.
You just
listen to your own Monday one back in the car.
That's the only podcast I listen to.
I have a huge interest in Armagh football, as I do in Meath as well, for you as well. Both my second and third teams have let me down badly. I can't even get an adopted team to win anything.
What about
Derry? Good God, will you ever stop? Well, like, there's not a bit of success amongst us, is there? Right, so who do we give this to, lads? I haven't put too much. Conor Harrison, he's a throwback to the old battering ram, full forward. Great bit of stuff. Seems to be a good character. Hopefully we'll get him on the show at some stage. So congratulations to Conor.
Yeah, it's an important perspective to when you look at the player he was up against too.
Massive. I've never seen Drew Wiley. I've never actually seen him not easily get the better of his man, and that's no exaggeration. I've never seen Drew Wiley not clean his man out, which is beyond belief. And you know, so for him to do that to him just adds more credibility to the performance. Anyways, Connor, congratulations, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.